Hold on, for some reason I've got the wrong. I've switched the camera around. Hold
Oh,
on. No, that doesn't
mindless
work.
Incompetence.
No, because I've got.
Me.
No, instead of.
Yeah, but this picture... never goes out in the pod, so it seems like I'm the one who's not technical, and you get away with this immense incompetence all the time.
Well, no, here's the thing. I normally have a big picture of you and a little picture of me.
Well, that's as it should be, because I must increase and you must decrease.
And now I've got two pictures of me. Oh, I'm not seeing you at all, which what? Some would say is a great blessing, but I actually find slightly disconcerting. Welcome, everybody, to...
Eventually, episode... welcome.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 346 of The Mid-Faith Crisis. My name is Nick Page. There, finally, in little window on my screen, is Joe Davis.
I hope I'm bigger than you.
Actually, you're not. It's gone all strange. Anyway, we're here.
And... we are.
The technological expertise has not diminished in any way, shape or form in our absence.
May I say, it's lovely to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. Yeah, I wasn't very far away. But
no.
Anyway, it's good to be back. And today we're going to be picking up on lots of feedback that's happened in while I've been away. And some about the Thomas Ord interview that we had last episode. Before that, of course, church notices.
Well... thank you for everyone who is booked into Rydal next year for the big church weekend away. But just to say, I mean, we had a slightly clunky system, but it was necessary to do it this way, where people booked their accommodation and then paid their conference fee. And it seems that whilst people have remembered to book their accommodation, they might not have necessarily paid their conference fee. So... you know, if you haven't paid that, please drop us an email, even if you can't pay it yet. And that would be useful to know. Thank you.
Yes, do get in touch with Stuart and Kathy, who have helped us to put this together. Well, in fact, they've
done
together,
it.
Really.
We've done nothing.
Know, we've just ridden in their coattails. If you have any questions, get in touch with them. We ought to say that it's pretty much sold out in terms of accommodation. But we still have a bit of room for a few day visitors if you want to book your own accommodation and come separately. So, do let us know if you're still interested.
Yeah, although not much room for day visitors.
No.
It turns out now. Yeah.
Isn't it incredible? We've only got 17 listeners and yet somehow we've got all these people. How has this happened?
I don't know. Well, maybe they've bred a little bit. It's hard to know.
They've got big families.
They have. Yeah, exactly.
I can't understand it. And they're coming to listen to us as well. We've done everything possible to put people off.
And yet still they come.
Still they come. Anyway, yes, great. How are you?
Oh, well, you know, okay. I mean, it's the best of times and the worst of times in the Davis household. There are things of great joy, like my lovely grandson and Rachel's had a birthday. We've had fun, and I love this time of year. I mean, it's what a great time of year, and the colours, and you know, even better when the sun shines. So, you know, tick, 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 all good. But yeah, there's my poor father-in-law is struggling, and that means my mother-in-law is struggling, and they're needing quite a lot of support. And so, you know, mixed season as always, I think, but just doing those things. You know, to do deal with life. Quiet times on the beach, always, as much as possible. So, yeah, no, it's a great time of year. And, of course, I'm loving seeing the migrant birds down here now. So you're still seeing swifts and swallows leaving and wheat ears and that. But we're starting to see a few things coming back now. So that's all wonderful, but no one wants to know how I am. Everyone wants to know how you are. How are you, dear boy? Well, yeah, of course. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'm good. Yeah, had a nice week away in your old stamping ground of North Kent.
Lovely.
Went to the Isle of Sheppey.
Did you now?
Now, that's a strange place, isn't it?
It's a very strange place indeed. But I tell you what, it's a great place for bird watching. Elmley Marshes Bird Reserve.
Yes.
Tremendous.
Yes. Well, I went to see some old churches, obviously.
Did you go to Harty Ferry?
No.
Didn't you? Well, at Harty Ferry, there's a very old church. Of course, famously, it has a pirate grave in the... in its grounds.
Oh, does it? Oh, no, I didn't go there. No, I went to Minster in Sheppey.
Oh, where, yes, the Abbey.
A very early Minster was established. And I also went to the Isle of Thanet as well. So I've been to two isles, neither of which are really isles in the classic sense of the word. Well, not now, because we've drained all the stuff around them. Anyway, so yes, lots of old churches. Lovely. That was lovely. Lots of lovely seafood. Yes, it's a beautiful seafood. Part of the world. Mm. But everybody sounds like an extra from EastEnders, don't they?
Really. A lot of Londoners.
The rural Kent accent seems to have disappeared, really. Everybody talks like that, you know. Anyway, I'm sure
they were lovely. Before you move on, do you want to hear my Minster Abbey story?
Go on. Yeah, lovely.
Well. We had some friends come down because I spent a lot of time on the Isle of Sheppey as a kid, and we were walking around Minster Abbey, and literally one of the massive organ pipes fell down and landed about a foot away from our friend who was coming to visit. And had it have landed on him, it certainly would have killed him or injured him very badly indeed. And this was a cause of great hilarity. Forevermore, yes. In the Davis household, this act of God. There you go.
Killed by an enormous organ.
Yes, I mean, exactly. Yeah. Say no more.
Well, I mean, Minster, obviously, comes from the Latin monasterium. It's the earliest word for churches that we have. They were known as Minsterum. So it's very old part of the world. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Today I went to see my new front door.
Did you? Where was it?
It's in a workshop being built.
Okay.
Because one of the joys of living in a very old property is that nothing is standard. So you can't just get a front door off the internet. Oh, no. Oh, no. This front door, it was built for hobbits for a start. You are going to have to bend double to come into our house from now on. I'll tell you that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so having it built, I loved it because you go into this wood workshop, join us building it at a great expense, I have to say. But I love all that. You know, if I had my time again, I would learn how to be a carpenter or a joiner. I've learned to work with wood. I just love it. It's fantastic. So that was really nice.
It ticks all your nerd buttons, doesn't it?
So, it does. Yeah. And my nerd buttons do need ticking. They really do.
Oh, and of course, by the way, new series of Traitors has started. Traitors. Oh, it's great. Did you see it last night?
No, don't tell me anything. Here's the thing, right? We're in deep trouble. What? Because Claire, with her love for going out and doing things of an evening, she goes out dancing on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
Right? And she goes to choir on Wednesday nights. So that means we can't watch Bake Off on Tuesday. We can't now watch Traitors on Wednesday. Was also the only new series of Only Murders
still
in the
backing
building.
Up.
So far, we've got tonight, before the next episode of Traitors, we've got to watch last night's episode of Traitors, plus Bake Off, plus two episodes of Only Murders in the Building. It's an absolute nightmare. I've got to not find out anything as well. It's awful.
Oh, that's going to be terrible. Tricky.
So I don't want to talk about it, but I've heard it's very good.
Well, it was fun.
Okay, good.
Now, listen, before we move on, can I just say I've had an idea. Don't laugh.
Oh, Lord, have you?
Because although it does sound silly, there is a serious point to this. OK, my idea is it's time to rewrite the Bible. Let's just rewrite it. Let's rewrite a mid-faith crisis Bible. We can take out all the bad bits now and we can just keep the good bits. And, you know, I feel empowered to do this because you've often said, look, everyone cherry picks anyway. I know I used to feel very guilty about that, but now I know everyone does it anyway. I think, well, yeah, let's just go right ahead. Okay, so that sounds stupid and if not a little heretical. On a more serious note, I thought it would be great to talk with people about their favourite verses and to compile people's favourite verses with a short summary of why that verse is so important to them.
That's
so that's
idea,
the more serious point behind the heretical idea?
Well, I mean, it's not a new idea.
No.
Obviously, rewriting the Bible. Thomas Jefferson did it, actually. He had a sort of humanist Bible.
Oh,
he sort of cut out, I know, that and all the slave owning. I think he cut out a lot of the stuff and sort of pasted it back together, literally.
Mm.
And of course, very early on, when there was debate about the scriptures, there was the questions. I can't remember the name of the guy. I think it's Marcion who had his own version of the Bible.
Okay.
Back in the late first century, early second century.
So nothing new.
So, no, let's not rewrite the Bible. But I do like your other suggestion about what are the most significant verses for people or stories.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll come back to that one. But in fact, if listeners do want to start sending in their favourite verses and why they're important to them, that would be great. Send it to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. We'll do a whole episode on the best verses in the Bible.
You do tend to come up with a lot of ideas, don't you? This is to do with your ADHD, I think,
yeah,
which is your attention deficit heretical disorder.
Yes, I have definitely got that. Deficit heretical disorder.
Yes, yes. So you're it's not only that you flip from one thing to another, but they're all heresies.
There's a lot of Baptists who would agree with you. Usually now I want to make a TV program about that.
Well, there you go, straight away.
All right, sorry.
Anyway, we should move on.
Yes, we should.
Let's get on to the feedback because we got loads.
Yes, let's. Okay, so Rob says, "Dear Joe and Nick, thank you so much for the podcast, blah, blah, blah." Oh, dear. Oh, he does say some nice things. How did that sneak through? He says, so he said, just some really quick thoughts. One, the Long Walk movie, the character Pete talks about seeing the light in everything. The more I think about it, the more I value those words, which I could so easily have missed from a movie which felt hopeless. There is hope and light. Amen. Was it Thomas Kelly? A Testament of Devotion. Did you do that on the Renovare course?
I did.
He talks about the light, the light within, really powerfully. That resonated very deeply with me. A Quaker thought is that stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm.
And then two, how does one subscribe to Nick's blog?
Well, you don't. You just go there, nickpage.net. I have to say, I haven't actually put anything up for quite a while, apart from... I do announce the podcasts on there, but I will. If you've got any interest in anything I've got to say, I suppose you could go there. I'll find out about my books. There's no subscription. It's not like this sort of Substack stuff.
Okay,
You literally just go there.
Then he says, 3, Rydal Hall. Oh, how I laughed. I went there on a school A-level geography trip in the mid-80s. Yikes. And then 4, and he said, there is an app which helps you find a moment of stillness already, and it's the Wild at Heart app. Yes, in fact, someone else wrote in with apps. It turns out there's a lot of apps that do absolutely nothing.
That's another idea that's just gone.
I fear there's no... you know, money-making machine to be had there. So, there we go.
Okay.
But thanks. Really appreciate that, Rob. Jeff said, hi, just thought I'd get in touch. It's taken the best part of a year, but I finally caught up from episode 1. Well done, Jeff.
Well done.
There should be some sort of long service medal for you and others who have done 300... what was it? How many episodes have we done? Too many. 46, I think.
We should have some kind of fanfare or something to announce it. Or a bell should ring. Anyway,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you could edit that in, we'd all appreciate it.
Okay.
He says, I'm sure Nick will view this as torturous, but I've loved it. Due to my work situation, I've not been in a good place for a while. And at times like this, I prefer the sound of human voice to music. I've learned so much. My top 3, he says... the discussion about the atonement. Well, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? By golly. He says, learning about the Enneagram, still not sure if I'm a 5 or a 9. The whole thing about stages of faith, simplicity, complexity, perplexity, harmony or foundation, construction, deconstruction and reconstruction. He says, on reflection, I've realised after being raised in an evangelical family, I've been deconstructing since I was about 16 or 17. I'm 54 now. Some things are slowly starting to make a bit more sense and I'm more at peace with those which don't. And your musings and ramblings have been a big help. He says, oh, and the blessing I turned into a song. So thank you. Yes, you did. Thank you. He says, I did sometimes rue my lateness to the podcast as I thought of some great responses to some bits, like the cocktails. Then I realised I'd be about 4 years behind time. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Well done, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jeff. The cocktails. Yes, were we naming them after theological ideas?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
It was a total depravity.
Yes, there was. Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's never too late for a new cocktail. So yes, feel free to sort of give us some good names.
Send in your recipes. Yeah.
I mean, I would say to Jeff, thank you. Yes, you might have learned stuff. I think I've learned a lot more. You know, part of the reason we do this, I think, it's like writing books. People say, why do you write? I write partly to learn what I think about something, you know, to learn stuff, you know, and to find out, to discover. I do think with the podcast, really, we've done it just so we could discover a lot of stuff ourselves,
exactly.
You know. Anyway, but that's very nice of you to say that. I don't know. Jeff talked about the stages. So I don't know whether it's worth just doing a very quick recap for people who've just come in recently. I think we've had, you know, well, at least two new listeners recently, something like that.
Yes.
So maybe without doing a lot on it, just run us through those. And I'm interested in whether your views on that has changed at all, what you've learned about that.
Really. Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, he mentioned them in groups of four, like he used the McLaren ones, which I've always liked: simplicity, complexity, perplexity, but out the other side to harmony. And I think there's lots of models of stages of faith, and some are six and some are nine and some are three. But the basic pattern is there's a sort of sense of order in the early stages of your journey of faith. But there comes a time, for a whole variety of reasons, where there's complete disorder very often. And that feels vulnerable. And a lot of people leave the journey at that point because they just don't find a space they can talk about it or think about it. They feel disloyal or disruptive, or are made to feel like they're pains in the neck for questioning things. But then there comes a sense of reorder. So, you know, McLaren calls it harmony. But there comes a sense, and, you know, very often the early stages of faith are marked by enthusiasm and learning all the rules of faith and, you know, loving going to church and loving worship and singing songs and studying the Bible. And then that middle point where things just fall apart because they don't seem to make sense anymore. And you can't necessarily join it up with the life you're actually experiencing. But as we are discovering, and really to the whole purpose of the podcast, there is hope the other side of that. And these are not modern thoughts. This has been going on for centuries. So, but I want to say as long as Christianity has been around. I mean, you've even got Peter's crisis of faith in some ways, and Thomas's in the Bible for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. One of the things that's probably come out more for me over the course of the podcast is, well, a couple of things. One, this can take a long time, as Jeff says. You know, the whole sort of moving through the stages can, when you look back, you can see, oh gosh, I started way back with this tiny thing.
And so
sometimes it comes on fast and sometimes it takes a long time. And the other thing is that I think it's an iterative process. It just goes round, doesn't it? You just when you think you've got things sorted, something else happens and you have to rethink another little bit. And I think it's a sort of constant process.
Yes, but that harmony doesn't mean it's all plain sailing the other side. I think that the harmony means more that you're content to sit with the questions that can't be answered
a lot
of the time. And I think Brian McLaren, in his book on the stages, really, really highlighted that final stage may look different for different people. It might look that you've settled in atheism, for example. That could be where this journey ends for you. It might be that you would call yourself a Christian humanist. So you really value humanity, and you would stand by all those things that humanism stands for, but still have a fundamental belief that there is a divine cosmic presence all around us. You know, or you may actually be quite happy, as certain presenters are, in attending an Anglican church and holding all these questions and happily serving there. it looks different for everyone, and we don't advocate any one model on this podcast.
No, that's a really good point. I think harmony makes it sound like you're sitting cross-legged on the top of a mountain humming,
doesn't
it? Really?
It does a bit.
In the lotus position, well put, having achieved transcendence, yeah, which I don't think is going to happen.
No.
But it is. I like that idea of sitting more easily with the mystery.
Do you think that what everyone has in common at that stage is their values more? The values of love, the values of care for people, for the planet, for humanity. I just wonder whether coming out the other side, you end up a bit more compassionate to yourself and others. You know, there are certain similarities, whether you're an atheist or a Christian or whatever you call yourself. You might end up looking quite similar because I think you have similar values. Don't know.
Well, yeah, no, I think there is something in that. You know, we've always got to be careful. Mm. I wouldn't want to say that people going through mid-faith crisis or having gone through it have a monopoly on harmony.
No, of course not. On that at all. No, of course not. Or compassion and love and kindness. No, of course not.
But I do think there's a sense in which certainties can lead us astray, actually, sometimes. You know, that when you're absolutely certain. I had a conversation the other day with somebody talking to me about the Anglican Church, because there's a new Archbishop of Canterbury, obviously, which we haven't really talked about.
No, we haven't.
Anyway, somebody was talking to me about the Anglican Church, this person, she said to me, she said, well, of course, the Anglican Church is just full of heretics.
Wow.
And I thought, well, you're not wrong, you know. I mean, she was talking to me, after all. But there was this level in which certainty had kind of pushed this person into, you know, dismissiveness.
Yeah.
Really. If you're so certain of your position, your systematic theology, that, and we had a good discussion because I, you know me, I think everyone's a heretic, really. But you know, I just didn't understand why you needed to sort of make a general blanket statement like that. But I mean, then again, you know, you can have very, very certain liberals. You know, certainty is not restricted to one side or the other. You can have as soon as you're convinced your position is right, and everyone else is wrong, then it's easy for you to step beyond that and just dismiss your opponents.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's really helpful. Thank you for that. Thank you for that recap. Very good.
Oh, so Joe wrote in and said, hi, Joe. A few episodes ago, you mentioned sharing info via the website about groups meeting around the country for people who want to meet up and encourage and chat and share life together. And they are starting a small group in Tadley, north of Basingstoke in Hampshire. And she says she'd be very happy to hear from anyone locally who'd like to come along. I did put it on the Facebook as well, on our Facebook page, but there we are. That is Joe, who is would welcome people who want to start a kind of mid-faith crisis group.
So you'd pass that along?
I would.
If they get in touch with you.
Yeah, if you send an email to me and I will forward your details on to Joe. That'd be great. Brilliant. Steve wrote in. Oh, yes. Yeah, so this is interesting. He says, I have a question. During a discussion with my wife, we were talking about someone she knew who was getting baptized for the second time. This was a new concept for me and one that neither of us could quite understand the thinking behind. Surely you can only be reborn once and not need a spiritual refresher. This was not a case of being baptised as a baby and then wishing to be fully immersed when you are able to make your own mind up in terms of faith or a change of denomination, which may require baptism to be considered a member. He says, I'm curious as to your far more knowledgeable thoughts on this concept. Well, Steve... You got that wrong.
No, how can you got that wrong? We've got a fully trained Baptist minister here.
Have
to
we?
Tell us about yes.
Where?
Yes, apparently. Well, reportedly, allegedly, and a lot of allegations have been made. Baptist. Okay, so give us the lowdown on the Baptist position on baptism.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to do that if that's what you really want. I mean, we would certainly, you know, full immersion, and you know that very often goes hand in hand with membership of a Baptist church, and so you know, big advocates of people making their own mind up. We don't tend to practice infant baptism for that reason. So you know, we have a dedication. And so, you know, that's in summary is the Baptist position. But I think the bigger point to make about this is, you know, this is what important to people. I don't know that it really matters much to God. That would be my point about this.
Okay.
I think for groups, baptism is a way of belonging to the tribe, to the club, to the church. And so, you know, it's right that we give weight to it, because it's good to have ceremonies and rituals that welcome you into a community and into a family and everything. So baptism is important for that reason, I think. I'm not sure God minds if you get baptized once or twice, or, you know, if you really feel like going for the hat trick, go right ahead. I don't think it's top of God's agenda for us as human beings. What do you think?
Yeah, I've often thought about it from the point of view. I was baptized when I was 14. But looking back, I don't think I was doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I did a classic bit of backsliding. I had a great time, thank you. And so I think I was doing it because everyone did it.
Yeah,
Baptist church, sure. Really. Yeah. I, looking back, and that was part of it. And I was probably a bit more genuine than that. But anyway, so I've often wondered whether I should go down again, as it were, under the water. But I don't know.
Why don't I baptise you next time you come to Worthing? Go on.
Well, you know, I think it's true. I think it's the symbolism, really. I mean, the church has argued about it for years. There was a big schism quite early on about baptism, because
just as Jesus wanted.
Yes, yeah.
Please divide over the issue of baptism.
Well, because what happened was, in the North African church, there was a period of persecution. And some of the bishops and the church leaders sort of folded under that. They submitted to the emperor and they gave in. And others therefore claimed that their baptism was no longer valid.
No.
Or they couldn't rebaptize. They couldn't go back into the church and start baptizing again, because they'd already given up on it. They'd failed, as it were. Whereas other church leaders said, no, the virtue of the act is in the act itself. It doesn't matter who does it.
Okay.
Which is a more logical position, really, isn't it? Because otherwise, who would be sinless enough to sort of do it? So, but it's always been argued over. I don't know. I think it's partly it's the word as well, isn't it? Mm. It's Greek word just means drenching, really. So you could do it every time you have a shower if you want. Yeah. It's up to you, really.
Yeah. Sure.
One of my favourite facts is that the founder of the Baptist Church, John Smith, I think it was actually baptised several times. One time he baptised himself because he couldn't find anyone else worthy enough to do it. He just felt he ought to do that. So, there we go.
Okay, so there we go. Thanks for that.
We've cleared all that up then, haven't we?
Well, look, let's talk about the Thomas Ord interview, if we may, because time is rumbling on. And we've had some brilliant emails in from Sam and Mel and Jill and others. So what we do is we're just, and they were long. I'm not going to lie, they were long and lacked pith. Let's try and summarise a question from them. And they sort of boiled down to two or three, really. Sam wrote in, and the question was basically, look, if God is not interventionist, how do things change, and how's the world really going to get better? I think always the hope is that God's in charge, and that God's in charge of the end of history. And so there's that sense in which God is able to control and is able to change things. And if we're saying that God can't do those things, then how can we have the hope that everything's going to work out in the end? Sam, I hope I've done a bit of justice to that email. And of course, Sam was saying that the world is seeming crazier and crazier than it is. And it looks like it's going totally the wrong direction. So, you know, where's the hope now?
Yeah, I think... I don't know how you'd feel. I think with Thomas Ord's argument, I wouldn't want to say it's not completely one thing or the other. You know, I do think that it's true that God doesn't intervene in the way, let's say, the Old Testament depicts it, or on those sort of macro levels. But I wouldn't want to go so far as to say God doesn't intervene. You know, I don't feel that. I don't feel that God's hands are entirely tied in that sense. I just think it happens at a smaller and more intimate level. It happens where people are open to that, for one thing. So I think it's a different form of intervention. I haven't given up on an interventionist God, but I don't see that God is going to suddenly change nations. I don't really think that's happened very much at all. Mm. You know, that the sort of big things that happen, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it happens at a personal level. And the other thing I would say is, I don't think the world is any more or less evil than it always has been.
Really? Yeah.
I don't. It just, the craziness seems worse at the moment because of where it's happening.
And we know about it more.
And we know about it, yeah. Because, you know, we look, let's say, across the Atlantic and we wonder what's happening over there. Yeah. Because it just seems much less stable than we're used to.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's any different to actually how it was maybe back in the 19th century. Yeah. If you look at American politics in that time, it wasn't exactly squeaky clean.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that we have to be careful about thinking, I don't know, it's all getting worse and we're in the end times. I don't think that's the case. But I do think God's intervention comes in through collaboration between us and God.
Yes.
And that still happens.
Exactly. And we're back to that whole dilemma, which I think you picked up before about, you know, when you go and buy someone a big old box of chocolates because you felt prompted to do it because you knew they were going through a hard time and they just thank God for it. You know, there are times you tend to say, yeah, but I actually did that. but theologically, I kind of think both of you were involved in that. And as
Absolutely,
if the world's going to change, God is going to change the world. God's going to do it through us. I suppose I'm still pretty much on that page to some extent.
I think that's the majority of things. And then I wouldn't, we've had this discussion before, but I wouldn't want to rule out the miraculous either. But I don't think everything is a miracle, or at least... Yeah. Perhaps everything is more miraculous than we think.
Yes, I prefer that. Yeah, good. Mm. Okay, Mel wrote in, and the basic question here is, how would prophecy work if God, you know, didn't know how things was going to happen?
Right.
And she says, I'm sure Thomas must go on into this in one of his books. So how does prophecy work if, you know, if God doesn't know that God's going to do that something in the future?
Yes, so the issue here is of God's agency through time and of God's omnipotency and I can't remember the word for omniscience.
I think it is omniscience,
so knowing everything. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to rule that out. I think that actually if we believe in a God who's outside time and space, then God can still see what's going to happen, even though God may not actually have... sort of micromanaged that. And I think ultimately I believe God has the victory. That's what I hope in, and I believe in the broader scope of God's victory that. And of course we should remember prophecy isn't really about prediction. It's actually about speaking truth into situations, speaking God's truth into situations. So I don't know how to Thomas Ord would say it, but from my point of view, I still think that God is in charge. I still think God knows the broad scope of things, what's going to happen. But I still think there's enormous scope for free will in terms of at an individual level.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions I have about my own view on this is, yes, if God is really immersed with us in time and even experiencing time with us, but you do think, to what extent is time a bit of a construction itself, a human construction? And therefore, if God is outside of time, looking at time, then how does it work out that you, how could it be that you don't know what's going to happen if you're outside of time? Anyway, it's a paradox,
and
my head hurts a little bit. I'm just thinking about it.
Ah, it's the paradox card.
The paradox card has been played. Yeah, that's right. And Sam's very keen on that one. And then Jill wrote in, and she was again a lovely email, but she said, I cannot and would not want to limit God to my small understanding of time as only what I can see, or only what is happening at this moment? If that is the case, do we have to give up our hope of eternal life? Do we give up the idea that he sent Jesus so that all of creation could be restored to himself? How could Jesus predict with such accuracy his death and resurrection if God didn't see beyond the present? Or am I missing the point here? I mean, that's kind of what we were saying, wasn't it? How does God not know what's going on? You could perhaps solve that with a complex understanding of God becoming human in Jesus and Jesus not knowing.
You could. And in fact, one of the interesting things about Jesus' predictions, for example, his predictions about the fall of Jerusalem, so-called predictions, is that the historical details don't quite match. Because he's not really talking in that manner. He's not doing a detailed prediction. He's sort of saying this is the kind of thing that will happen.
Yeah.
You know, there's only one way this is going to end, basically.
Yeah.
He's saying. I think I come back to what I just said. I think that it's, to me at least, it's not an all or nothing.
Yeah.
It's not like you either get a God who whose will can be thwarted at a human level, who wants us to do something but we do something different. And that happens and that rules out any of God's power, or you get a God who micromanages everything. It's not one extreme or the other. I think it's in the broader picture, the cosmic picture, the overall picture, Jesus has the victory. God has the victory. We know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
But within that, within the detail, I think there's much more freedom perhaps than we thought. Well, that's what I think. What do I know?
No.
I'm an Anglican, therefore a heretic.
Exactly. Okay, let's finish with this because I love this from Stuart. He said, hi, pithy alert.
Excellent.
He said, listen to Thomas Ord at Greenbelt in 2024. For a minute, I thought, this is it. Loved it. Then I thought, why create a world in the first place where evil is even possible? And it crashed, unfortunately. I asked him, but his answer was so complicated, it crashed too. Is there a way through this, Stu?
This is a great podcast, isn't it? Because so far we've had the problem of time, issues of free will and determination.
It's all been there.
And now we're basically on to the issue of why does evil exist?
Yeah. And can I hurry you? Because it's going on. We need to finish. So 20 seconds. Why does evil exist?
No idea, but it does. I think the question is, why bother, isn't it? Is what Stu was saying. Why would he bother to create a world where evil is possible? It's a very, very good question. It's something that people have grappled with for years, obviously. I suppose one way I'm inching towards it, and I have to be very careful about how I say this, would be to say, maybe evil isn't the final word. Maybe evil isn't the worst thing, or the presence of evil isn't necessarily the worst thing. Now, as I said, I would be very careful about it because I don't want to minimise anyone's suffering or minimise what's happened to people or minimise the abuse that is handed out to people on a daily basis in millions of cases around the world, or what we see going on around the world. But maybe love is greater. Maybe love is worth it. You know, to create a world where love is possible, you have to have the possibility of not loving.
Yeah.
You have to have the possibility of evil. No. And maybe that love is so important, so powerful, so worth experiencing for people that the possibility of evil is worth the risk.
Because the alternative is for us to be automatons or, you know, without
free will. Or not exist at all.
Or not exist at all. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the alternative is a world without Nick Page in it.
No. Oh, can you imagine?
What kind of alternative is that?
No, well, you are actually right. I mean, I know you're saying that tongue in cheek, but, you know, let's face it, to be a beloved child of God and an unceasing spiritual being has got to be a good thing.
You know, this is what I encounter with meet sort of persecuted Christians who've been through terrible evil, terrible wrong. But what they've discovered, their relationship with Jesus, their walk with Jesus, their experience of love, their experience of forgiveness, of having to forgive and finding the release in that, it somehow overpowers all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cancel it out. It's not kind of some. We're not doing maths here. We're doing quantum physics or something. I don't know. We're doing something where all of these things states can coexist.
Yeah.
But I feel that the possibility of love is worth the risk of evil.
Well, yeah. Let's ponder that some more. Mm. Yeah, thank
and
you.
And I say that in humility as much as I can manage, because I understand people go through terrible things, and we all experience things that we wish didn't happen.
Mm.
But I think that's the only way I can make sense of it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Thank you for saying that. That's great. Well, listen, our time is surely up. Let's say a big thanks to everyone who listens, and a big thanks to everyone who gives, and a big thanks to everyone who even recommends this rambling thoughts of ours. I mean, bless you for that. If you've got any comments, do write in to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. Send me your favourite verse and why it's your favourite verse as well, just a reminder. But do keep sending in thoughts on the interview with Thomas as well.
Yeah, and on other subjects. And thank you very much for writing in. We have had to truncate a few this time. Yeah. People wrote very, very long and intelligent emails about Thomas Orr because it was a complex subject.
Exactly.
But we just had to sort of pick out the real key questions there. But we do appreciate
them. We really do.
We really do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've called upon you as a Baptist minister earlier to explain Baptist orthodoxy,
yourself.
which may I say you did in a less than adequate way,
but I really did.
Somehow you passed your exams. I don't know how. I guess it's just a practical thing, isn't it, with Baptist exams? You just have to be able to lift people up and down, basically, and say the words.
You have to be able to lift people up and down, and you have to be able to bribe the principal of a Baptist college to you know, fully get through and accredited.
Excellent. Good.
I didn't. It was a joke.
Well, you'll never know, because I think that college is defunct now anyway.
Sadly.
But anyway, perhaps you'd like to redeem yourself as a Baptist pastor, therefore, and end with a blessing. That would be great.
I don't think I'm redeemable in that sense. But I'm a human being, and so here's a blessing for you going into this week ahead. May you find in the noise and pain of this world the quiet whisper of love that will not let you go. When faith falters and certainty fades, may you discover that grace still holds. May hope take root in small, ordinary moments, in laughter, in kindness, and in the beauty of this season. And may the love of God, wider than doubt, deeper than fear, be the ground beneath your feet and the light that leads you home.